Old Devil Moon. That you stole from the skies. It's that old devil moon in your eyes.
Yeah, Alice thinks Blackamore, etc. But the theme of Finian's was a total fantasy. And it was an American fable in which an Irishman and his daughter come from Ireland, search around, and find Rainbow Valley in Missituckee, okay? And he believes that if he plants the crock of gold, which he stole from the leprechaun, in the ground, that it will grow, just like at Fort Knox, right? The whole thing was fabulous.
I hear a bird, a glockamoha. And me a cheering word. I hear a breeze, a river shining breeze. It well may be it's followed me across the seas. Then tell me, how are things in Glockamara? Is that little brook still leaping there? Does it still run down to Donnycove through Killybegs, Kilkerry, and Kildare? How are things in Glockamara? Is that willow tree?
And then the southern white senator, a very stereotypic part, finds out that Finian has this land and tries to run him out of town because there's blacks and whites living together in the, you know, the sharecroppers, and they claim that Finian's daughter is a witch, and they're going to burn her at the stake, and all sorts of, you know, incredible things that say something about the American scene. But the score was so great that people who see it do not see it as a socialist tract, which is the only one on Broadway. They see it as a very, very entertaining musical, and unique in American musicals, because in the first place there are very, very few musicals which are original. Most musicals are adapted from books. And this was just conceived by Fred Sadie and Yip as a satiric send-off on the American society. So you've got this great song in here, When the Idle Poor Become the Idle Rich. How are you going to know who is which? Okay, yeah, like that.
When the idle poor become the idle rich, you'll never know just who is who or who is which. Won't it be rich when everyone's poor relative becomes a racker relative and farms no longer itch? What is which?
When we all have earned millions and plastic teeth.
And so Finian's Rainbow has become a classic. Now, it's interesting that Finian's has not had a national tour since 1948, but they play it in every single high school in the United States three or four times a month in every state of the union. So Finian's was at the time, 1947, when a Cold War was beginning and the House Un-American Committee was starting up, and they were searching for lefties. And by 1951, Yip had been blacklisted from any chance to do any of the wonderful shows in that they did in Hollywood, Dr. Doolittle, Treasure Island. He was blocked from working there. And then he was blocked from going into radio and into TV. So, and this is an historical fact which Yip himself says, Broadway, the American theater in New York City, was the only place where an artist could stand up and say whatever he wanted, provided he got the money to put the show on. So for Finian's Rainbow, they had to have 25 auditions because they said it was a commie red thing. And finally they got the money up and they put the show up, but by that time Yip was blacklisted, and his next show was Jamaica with Lena Horne, which is an all-black cast. Well, one other thing in terms of Yip's drive for racial ethnic equality, and that is that Finian's Rainbow in 1947 was the first show on Broadway where the chorus line consisted of blacks and whites who danced with each other, and the chorus was an integrated affair.
What happened to him during the McCarthy era?
Well, he could not work on any major film that they wanted him to work on from the major studios in Hollywood. The setup was that Roy Brewer, who was the head of the IATSE union, I'm sorry to say that, was the one who...
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, this is a stagehands union. I'd like to say good things about unions, but they get bureaucratized and they go right-wing, you know. They get bad. This was a bad leader. And he terrorized all of the Jewish moguls who were being accused of communism by the House Un-American Activities Committee, and they yielded to whatever he said to them, out of fear that they would get branded as communists or that they boycott the film, all right? And so when, you know, they went called Yip in to do Huckleberry Finn with Burt Lane, then Roy and the guys said, no, he's on our blacklist, okay? And you can't hire him. And then Yip went away and they wanted him to work on Dr. Doolittle. No, you can't hire him. And the same thing for radio and TV. That was known as a, quote, blacklist, which wasn't, that was the first use of the term, because in small towns where you had company corporations going, if you did something that the company didn't like, you were blacklisted from town. You couldn't get a job in town. But this was the first time, due to the technology, that a blacklist was national and accompanied by a loaded word, communist, that could get you fired any place. For Yip, it was horrible because the his friends, who were artists, suddenly had no income. And there was suicides, there was divorces, there were people who left the country, there were people whose lives were just ruined. And so Yip supported some of them. Dalt Drummle, who was one of the Hollywood Ten, who were first picked out by the House Un-American Activities Committee, to go to jail for a year, citation. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? You know, Yip fronted him with money and so forth. It was a horrible time.
How long couldn't Yip work for?
For about, from 1951 to 1962. He came back to Hollywood in 1962, and he and Harold Arlen did Gay Paris, which is with Judy Garland. She asked them to come back, and it's a cult animated cartoon now, which you can get in your video. And I remember him putting on a show at the Tabor Auditorium, Welcome Back Yip, you know, and he in 62.
But that means that The Wizard of Oz made it big during the time that he was blacklisted. That was, and when you consider the social commentary that it was making, that's pretty profound.
Yeah, but I don't think hardly anyone knows the political symbolism underneath the Wizard of Oz, because, again, it's a thing that happens in Finian's Rainbow, even though, as Peter Stone, a noted playwright on Broadway, said it's the only socialist track ever on Broadway, all right? People don't hear the political message in it, okay? They are vastly entertained. And the same thing happens with the Wizard. You know, no one would even think of such a thing.
My song, like When the Idle Poor Become the Idle Rich, and Brother Can You Spare a Dime, caused a great deal of furor during a period in Hollywood when a fellow by the name of Joe McCarthy was reigning supreme. And so they got something up for people to take care of us, like me, called the Blacklist. And I landed on the enemy list. And in order to overcome the enemy list, what was the enemy list? Well, it's one that you were a red. Another one that you were a blue nose. And the other one that you on the black list. Finally, I thought the rainbow was a wonderful symbol of all these lists. In order to overcome the enemy list and this rainbow that they gave me the idea for, I wrote this little poem. Lives of great men all remind us, greatness takes no easy way. All the heroes of tomorrow are the heretics of today. Socrates and Galileo, John Brown, Thoreau, Christ and Debs, heard the night cry, down with traitors, and the dawn shout, up the Rebs. Nothing ever seems to bust them. Gallows, crosses, prison bars. Though we try to readjust them, there they are among the stars. Lives of great men all remind us, we can write our names on high, and departing, leave behind us thumbprints in the FBI.
Today's program was actually produced for radio in 1996 with Errol Maitland and Dan Coughlin. Special thanks to Gary Helm, Brother Shine, and Julie Drissen. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Monte, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Ryan Devereux, Dina Guzder, Manal Khan, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Jessel Moore, Jessica Lee. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Thursday, July 30th, 2015. Israel's new law sparks wide-scale condemnation. Meanwhile, Israeli troops clash with local youth and kidnap others during invasions targeting West Bank communities. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli soldiers invaded on Thursday at dawn at the Aida refugee camp north of the West Bank city of Bethlehem and kidnapped three young Palestinian men. Eyewitnesses said that several military vehicles invaded the refugee camp before the soldiers broke into and searched a few homes and kidnapped three Palestinians. During the invasion, local youth clashed with invading troops by hurling stones at them. Israeli soldiers responded with live rounds and tear gas. No injuries were reported. Also on Thursday at dawn, undercover Israeli forces have kidnapped several Palestinian children after invading their homes in Al-Isawiyya town in occupied East Jerusalem. Soldiers also clashed with local youth, causing injuries. The Wadi Hilwa Information Center in Silwan said that clashes took place in the town after the soldiers invaded it and started breaking into homes and searching them. Clashes mainly took place in the school's neighborhood, Mahmoud neighborhood, and Dari neighborhood, and undercover Israeli soldiers infiltrated the town and fired rounds of live ammunition. Moreover, regular units of the Israeli army also fired rubber-coated metal bullets and gas bombs and concussion grenades. Several Palestinians suffered the effects of tear gas inhalation. In other news, Hanan Ashrawi, head of the International Affairs Unit at the PLO, condemned the recent Israeli Parliament Knesset law that allows Israeli troops to force-feed Palestinian political detainees on hunger strike. In a statement sent to press, Ashrawi described the new law as a politically supported torture and against international law. From his part, Isa Karaka, head of the Palestinian Political Detainees Committee of the Palestinian Authority, deemed the new law as unethical torture and noted that at least three political detainees held by Israel have died by this method of force-feeding back during the 1980 hunger strikes. The Israeli Medical Association announced that the new law is not necessary and damaging. Meanwhile, Physicians for Human Rights in Israel called the new law shameful. The force-feeding law was passed in the Israeli Knesset with 46 votes to 40. Palestinian political detainees held by the Israeli army uses hunger strike to protest the administrative detention policy Israel uses and ill-treatment by their captives.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it is Bathrob Spears Broadside, the last of six shows before we hit the bricks, unless we find a studio, of course. This is show number one of six, so you are there. Coming up on this show, a lot of audio from the 8th City Hall Sleepers Sleep Out, I should say the Freedom Sleepers Sleep Out, and upcoming City Council update. We have a Tuesday meeting of the Silly Councils, or should I say the Shitty Council, depending on how strongly you feel about them, and your calls. So stay tuned, and we'll talk.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. A song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and this is a two-hour show. For all newcomers, we talk about civil rights stuff for poor people, and particularly people who are outside, as I see it. And it is a lot of it is pretty much my focus and my opinion. I think I'm generally right, but I can be wrong. I've gotten an email from Don Lane, the mayor, today, who responded to a meeting that I and several Freedom Sleepers had with him on Monday, where we brought up a number of issues. I have a particular concern about such things as the 24-hour bathrooms that had been my impression were budgeted to begin opening after... After the $25,000 was set aside to begin opening them at the Locust Street and Soquel Avenue locations, you know, all you downtowners. They're the peekaboo bathrooms specially designed for hundreds of thousands of dollars to make sure that nobody does anything nasty or naughty in the bathrooms. Of course, this is at the expense of any privacy and dignity you might think you would have, which... I think would not pass muster with any union where people worked, for sure. And, you know, obviously a different solution would be to put an attendant in there if they're really that paranoid about problems that come up, whether it be stuffage in the bathrooms, which I think is the same kind of problem, you know, where toilet fixtures get messed up on Saturday nights or stuff. You get a, you know, it's a cost of doing business, I think. But it becomes a particular... cause celebre for those who want to blame poor people, homeless people, folks who have no place to go outside or who are traveling through and are trying to make ends meet on a low-income budget, trying to see the world, or have chosen an alternate lifestyle. Yes, there are some of those, the homeless by choice, as the evil moniker has it. Anyway, Lane has... his recollection, and he showed me the motion text, which was a little vague, but it was not that two bathrooms were supposed to be opened, but there was only bathrooms for a pilot project, and it was vague, and so it actually didn't specify that two bathrooms were to be opened. But that seemed to be, I've been reviewing the actual debate that happened, the discussion of the budget by the City Council on May and June, there were actually a number of hearings, but the budget was sort of proposed in May, and then it was ratified in June. And, again, my impression on listening to it, it's vague, and I never got a straight answer from Pamela Comstock, which is too bad, because she was the individual who introduced and stood by this resolution that there should be $25,000 appropriated for keeping bathrooms. I think she talked about the four parking garages, although I don't know that more than two of them actually have existing bathrooms in them. I mean, there's a Riverfront garage, and then there's another one that is downtown in the middle of Pacific Avenue area. Locust Street does have a bathroom. There's one near Locust Street that's a block or two away. Walnut Street, I guess it is, doesn't have a bathroom, or at least not one that's accessible to the public. Anyway, Lane insists that there was only money for a pilot project. That's also what Micah Posner, another council member, insists. My recollection was that there were two, and I claimed the staff sabotaged that. And indeed, the staff initially came back with recommendations in opposition to what the City Council voted, which was that the bathrooms be 24-hour. And this, of course, was vigorously opposed by Cynthia Matthews, who would prefer to see... another porta potty, like the Posner poo poo porta potty that's opened up on Front and Laurel and been there for a year. Far less permanent, far less usable. Porta potties are, as Pamela Comstock rightly said, they're sort of stinky, smelly, undesirable places. I don't know if this is actually the case with the Posner porta potty. I know that Brent Adams and others, to their credit, have tried to make sure that those bathrooms are cleaned more regularly. They're not bathrooms. They are actually porta potties. It is a porta potty. That's our one 24-hour bathroom and possibly the second one at Soquel Avenue, which reportedly was closed down after being open for 24 hours for about a month, but I don't know that that's true either, so I'm still looking for input on that. And input is what I'm interested in this show. If you would like to call in, do. The telephone number here is 427-3772, which is 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. So call in and we'll talk. You got new information. You got breaking news. If you want to be a part of the station for the limited lifetime we have left, although we are offering $300 now, not just $200, but $300, if you can find us a location. You don't have to provide it. You just have to provide information that will lead us to a location where we can be for a year or expect to be for a year at a reasonable rent. And that's somewhere between $300 and $500, I would think. And we're not talking a studio apartment here. We're talking about one relatively small room. Anyway, even a shack might work. So we're not talking about a transmitter. We're just talking about a spot to where people could come and go on a 24-hour basis who are our free radio broadcasters. If you have information on that, give me a call at 423-4833. That's not the studio number. That's my number, and also the number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which you should call if you have reports of police misconduct, harassment of homeless people, if you want to help, if you feel like you have computer skills or speaking skills or writing skills or want to be a court watcher or want to help out the Freedom Sleepers, of which I'm one, give a call there, 423-HUF, 423-4833. If you want to talk about issues, call into the studio, 427-3772. As I said, at least two things that Don Lane has corrected me on, although, again, I'm not entirely clear about this, whether, in fact, I was wrong when I stated that City Council, it did vote unanimously to apportion money for a pilot project. It was my understanding it was for two, count them, two, and I'm not including the Posner poo-poo porta-potty, but two actual bathrooms that already exist that would be open further for a 24-hour period. But Lane seemed to, his recollection when we talked to him, and that was also Michael Posner's recollection, so that's two against one already, and they may well be right, but what I did was I reviewed the audio, and it seems to me rather ambiguous, but not to them. When I emailed Pamela Comstock, as I said before, she did not respond to my email, so I'm going to have to, knock at her door and see if she will answer a direct verbal inquiry. I'm not sure what her problem seems to be. She's refused to meet with the Freedom Sleepers. I've heard, I believe it was from Steve Plaich, perhaps, that she felt she would not talk with people engaged in an illegal enterprise. You know, the illegal enterprise are trying to restore civil rights to homeless people who have no legal place to go. Pamela is way up shit creek on that particular idea, in my view. But she is ahead of the pack on the idea of providing bathrooms for the community generally and for poor people as well. The idea of this separate but equal or separate but not so equal bathroom that Micah Posner came up with at a ridiculous cost of, $15,000, as I remember? The same amount of money to be passed on for a maintenance of a 24-hour bathroom would be a much better way to go. But, you know, he had to get it by the staff. The staff had to pay attention to that. And indeed, the staff opposed Comstock's proposal tooth and nail. Matt Dettel, the public works head, I guess it is, he insisted that, you know, it would be vandalized and it wouldn't be a good idea and there were other things they should do. And even after unanimous resolution by the city council in May, he came back in June with a proposal for limited hours to do a pilot project. In other words, ignoring or contradicting the unanimous vote of the city council and recommending that all funds be stripped, or the $25,000 be stripped from the budget, so that the whole thing wouldn't go forward anywhere. At least that was part of the proposal. The $25,000 was voted in, and the Soquel Avenue bathroom was opened up. We're talking about the peekaboo bathroom, of course, that they get to watch you. And Cynthia Matthews insisted, I remember I just reviewed the video on this of the council meeting. Councilmember Matthews insisted that it would not be safe for people because there wouldn't be enough people walking by to keep an eye on the folks going poo-poo and pee-pee through the see-through bathrooms to assure security of the public and of the staff, the poor staff, who have to clean up the bathrooms. I'm not going to comment further on this. Let's turn now, however, to some actual audio of sleeping outside at City Hall, the Freedom Sleep number 8 that happened last Tuesday. And we'll begin at the beginning, and then we'll kind of maybe jump to some of the more exciting points, or your phone calls, 427-3772. I want to remind you, this is a continuing enterprise. And I'm surprised and gratified when I hear people are interested in this. I went to court today in a bathrobe and teddy bear, which is what I wear on in public on occasion when I'm publicizing these ridiculous laws that we have to fight and challenge either in court or in public protests. And, you know, it brought a lot of smiles to the faces of actually every second or third person that I passed. Not, of course, the security guards, but, oh, well, you can't win them all. And one woman whose father is a police officer, and actually both her father and her grandfather are police officers in L.A., of all places, said she was interested and wanted to actually help us out. And I was, you know, that kind of thing comes out of the blue. And we are still a pretty small group out there, the Freedom Sleepers. I mean, our numbers did not grow substantially with Freedom Sleep number 8. But we were determined, and the repression did grow. The crackdown, which you can find described on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. There are a number of stories there that, and with photographic background, good photos by Zav, who did a great job of what normally Alex DeRosi does. I think Alex has a story he may be putting out, too. He's usually got a lot of irons in the fire, and he has to kind of take his time to get the stuff out. And but when he gets it out, it does good and looks good and is quite impressive. And visually, I wish I could do that kind of stuff, taking the time, and do take the time maybe in the future to be able to make such presentations. Perhaps I will. In any case, you can go online and see some accounts, but you can also hear now some of my commentary as to what happened. This happens every Tuesday at City Hall. On this particular Tuesday, things were rougher for us. We were warned by Councilmembers Posner and Lane that there would be more police repression coming. Actually, Lane didn't warn us. Posner did. We tried to figure out some responses to that. We kind of made it up as we went along, but we did some prep beforehand. And we were roundly ticketed, and I was arrested, as was Kevin, another activist who's been doing some really, well, strong work for not just the Freedom Sleepers, but for other homeless people. He's a guy with a lot of compassion and a lot more energy than I have, that's for sure. In any case, let's hear some of the audio from there, and also your thoughts, if you want, 427-3772, and we will see where we're at here. Let's see.
Like the food, really, it's not good.
So I'm talking with someone who may or may not wish to be on audio. We're here at City Hall. It's almost 6 o'clock. There's actually a lawyer hanging out here, probably not in the official capacity, Bob Tarrant. I count at least 3 first alarm ski guy, 4 if you count a guy over there. We have an entire bunch of parking area has been vacated around the city park. I think it's available, but
all right, thank you very much.
Yeah. And there's a Food Not Bombs table of literature, Food Not Bombs table of rice and apples, and some kind of tasty-looking? Maybe tasty-looking.
Beans?
And
what is this? Yeah, I'll take some beans. I'm taking the broth.
Smells like soup or broth. A lot of bread. And
technical problems. Don't go away.
Been here my whole life. No.
I should say that one of the things that distinguished, actually, there were two major features that immediately struck the eye as you approached the protest in the early hours, late hours of the afternoon. One was the red jackets over each of the meters, the sort of small jackets over the parking meters that prohibited you from parking all along the side of, I guess it's Center Street, right across from the library, between Locust and, I guess it's Church. And then there was a similar series of meters along Church Street opposite the Civic Auditorium on the other side of the street where City Hall is located. Without any explanation as to why this was the case, though there were in three spots set up these large kind of devices, these metal, they kind of looked like I don't know, transformer toys, but they're on a huge scale. They go up 30 feet high, but they weren't that high when we went there, that they later opened up to provide for these high lights, high, intense lights that you see on along Pacific Avenue on occasions when there are crowds there. Unpermitted crowds, I would like to point out to Cynthia Matthews and all the other fanatic Law and Order gang that's trying to criminalize everything they can think of, or restrict it so severely that it becomes reassuring to them. But in any case, that's what you saw. You saw these the entire front of City Hall devoid of parking spaces. And indeed, Keith McHenry, one of the main activists who provided the food and who provided a stove and literature and such, got himself a ticket for simply parking to briefly unload material there. Looks like we have a caller, though. Let's just see what's cooking here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yeah, this is David. I just wanted to say that people really ought to be very, very clear that the city council is doing all these moves to intentionally interfere with freedom of speech and to intentionally interfere with protest. Now these red bags on all the parking meters, that's where the sleepers who are going to sleep in the car will be supporting the freedom sleepers, and they interrupted that as soon as we start getting organized around that. It's over and over again the same story, so we can't let these criminals get away from it. If you're any kind of a patriot at all, you'll show up at City Hall and protest Tuesday. Okay, Robert, thank you for letting me vent.
Sure, thank you, David. Yeah, I mean, it seemed pretty clear that this was the reason. Actually, it was identical to what happened 5 years ago when a similar, an identical procedure was followed because a group called Peace Camp 2010, which had begun at the county building and then moved to City Hall, continued their three-month-long protest. They actually had a porta-potty that they brought with them, and they had it with them on a vehicle, and they used it. We intended to have one, and I believe at least some activists intend to have one next Tuesday when we'll have our ninth sleepout. And you're invited to come to that. That's going to be Tuesday afternoon starting at around 5. Kind of, we have a general assembly at 6. Munchables are provided later. And although it is, the temperature is getting hotter there, and as you will hear, although a lot of what I'm recorded here is not the drama of a police department and a city administration mistakenly trying to crush or discourage protests. That's, you know, it's kind of like watching a movie, I guess. It's entertaining in a way. It's, you know, it's exciting in a vicarious kind of way. It's sort of depressing. But you'll hear the real stories of real people who came to this protest and what they're doing. And as well as you'll hear my pungent commentary, which is always exciting stuff. So listen in and call in, 427-3772.
Then what we should do.
And there's a Food Not Bombs table of literature, Food Not Bombs table of rice and apples, and some kind of tasty-looking? It might be tasty-looking.
Beans?
And
what is this? Yeah, let's eat some beans. I'll take a broth.
It smells like soup. Or broth. A lot of bread. And Some folks, Juan. So what's been happening? How long have you folks been here?
I've been here my whole life. No, a couple hours.
What a fate at City Hall your whole life. And what have you seen? I see these strange-looking blue, look like generators.
10 cups earlier, like around, I came here like around 2, and there was like 10 cops. We saw Steve Clark and Bogle. They were here.
Well, overseeing the proceedings, the chief and the vice chief, or chief of all vice, as the case may be. And did you see what they were doing, these 10 cops?
I know they set up these lights. They closed off, you know, made it so that no one can park along this street and along these streets. And then they brought these lights that they're going to shine on us.
Explain to anyone what the reason was they did this, as if I didn't know.
No, they did not. But we don't need to ask. We know.
Well, as I said, I know what we call it. It looks like generators. It says it's a blue machine with a two-wheeled blue machine. I'm wondering if these are the same kind of machines they used 5 years ago to drive away a similar protest, a kind of a generator that cooks up loud. It powers lights at night, and that may be what they're doing. And you think so, Juan?
I think so, yeah.
And you think so as well?
Yes.
There seems to be a general agreement among the two of the three people here. I myself don't know what the hell they're for, but...
We just need the speakers, and we'll have a disco party tonight.
Disco duck, a duck. Aha! As well as the ever-present videographers doing their thing. And...
No, it's interesting. The lights, actually, as activist, I believe it was activist Gary Johnson, distantly wrote under a pseudonym, a letter, calls himself G Online, I believe. He wrote that the presence of these Klieg lights at night that really strongly light up the whole area, while they may have been designed to discomfort the sleepers and the We suspected that was the reason, although we never got an answer from the police department. I don't even recall asking the question directly, although it probably was asked 5 years ago. We haven't asked the question this time, or actually I did. I asked the question of Lieutenant Lamas as he was actually turning on the lights three or four hours after this, or 2 or 3 hours actually. Why? And I got no answer from him. So we don't know the answer yet. I have put in Public Records Act requests. I don't think I've got one in for the lights yet to find out what every document that went between the police and whatever contractors they're using, whoever ordered this, whether there was any paper trail for why. Not clear. But Gary Johnson's view was that though it was designed to drive us away, it actually provided a much sharper visual image for those driving by. People could read our signs and so forth and see us there serving people free food and so forth. Hi, you're on Free Radio, or you were, anyway. Try again. 427-3772. Call in. This is a call-in show. Let's hear some more.
Michael O'Grady, you're with Free Radio. Are you going to be available in the studio to broadcast for some of the night? Or are you going to be probably going into?
I could be. If you need somebody there, I could be there. I could stay most of the night. Yes.
Well, that might be good if you stayed in the studio in order to broadcast events as they happen after 10 o'clock at night when things are going to get.
All right, we can do that.
And unfortunately. When I found Free Radio wasn't broadcasting, several hours later, I went to the studio, and we were able to we communicate with people there. Michael said he was actually there waiting to do it, but the poor fellow fell asleep. He was so exhausted and didn't do it. So next, and also, frankly, at our end, I was arrested, I guess around 11:30 or so, and so I kind of spaced it out, didn't tell other people about it. But next time, next Tuesday, we're hoping to do it more effectively, particularly since these could be the last days of Free Radio, and it'll be important maybe to use this resource while we have it. So, yeah, hopefully we'll do it next time, next Tuesday. So, bring your favorite songs, and you may be on the radio. In fact, you probably will be. You can be on the radio today if you call in 427-3772. is how.
I was going to sleep down here, but that's fine. I can sleep over there. That's fine. I'll stay there.
Okay, and
you just call in if you need to.
I'm going to borrow a phone and do that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, sounds good.
All right, so we're going to get some radio coverage, and we have looks like a mellow scene. There are hula hoops. Here's a woman with a small dog. What's the name of this dog, madam?
Sammy.
And Sammy looks like he or she likes it in your lap.
Yeah. Sammy's having a great time.
You intend to spend the night here with the apparently extra policing to make sure you're extra safe?
You mean the guys on their cell phones?
Yes, always alert for any threats to you.
Yeah, calling for reinforcement. No reason.
So you're not. Do you think you'll be here snoozing away, or do you think that this is not the kind of scene you want to go to sleep in? Or do you not know at this point?
I don't know. Yeah.
Who can tell?
We'll see what happens. Where will I be needed? That's where I'll be.
At least you have more than 2 months sober. This girl in AA, she was an Aquarius.
Oh,
she wasn't.
How about you?
She had 2 months sober.
You're going to be dancing in the spotlight?
Not very well at all. You know, she was nice. She was sweet. But I think she had been, like, high off of Ritalin. And she was really cranked out of her mind.
Are you intending to spend the night here with us at the sleep app?
I could stay till, like, 9. And then I have to go back.
Now, where are you? Are you
I'm supposed to do? I'm supposed to do a chore.
Oh.
I have to go back to the registry shelter.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the registry shelter. If you're up, I mean, I'm recording this, so if you don't have to do any of this. But do you know what the qualifications are for getting on the waiting list of the registry shelter?
Yes, in fact, I just actually was making. I was. Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes. So I had, it stopped.
You're working on your iPod, iDisc,
I swear. Yeah, I'm actually working on this photo project, but now, how does that, okay, can you fix that to photo?
I wish I knew what the
There's
hell
There's only one guy I know in Santa Cruz that can do it, and he rides a bike, and he's...
You might have some people who are very savvy about
that. Happening to me?
I wish you luck on that. Sure. Tell me about the River Street Shelter qualifications.
So due to the fact that Cheryl just left the River Street Shelter, she's been with River Street for the last 20 years, and her mother has Alzheimer's, and there's a red carpet in the home that she lives in. And so she resigned from her job.
Cheryl McKittridge?
Yes, she's extremely licensed, you know, caregiver, wonderful Svetlana Russian Moscow type, like you'd think that she was born and raised in Moscow and that, you know, she makes homemade Russian borscht soup and, you know, homemade kombucha because she's like a very giving motherly type of
qualifications
woman.
Are these anyone can get in or?
I just talked to Gayla and Gayla said that she lost her job due to Mia De La Rosa, her boyfriend Devin and her were taking advantage of some people and throwing away their work uniforms, and she graduated from like an all-girls Catholic high school named Crundlett High School.
But let me ask you again though, what about the qualifications to get on the waiting list?
Okay.
Do you know what they are?
Yeah, so via Monday, Wednesday, Friday after 2:30, you can call in to River Street and put your name on a waiting list. And after about 60 days to 90 days, you will be able to get your 30-day bed and go through relapse prevention and have access to, you know, the kitchen facility. You have a chore that you'll do. And then you can also have a bedroom and have a bed and have, like, a...
Are there any restrictions about getting on the waiting list? I mean, do you have to have any an income source? Do you have to be a resident?
I think you have to have never been kicked out or, you know, booted out of River Street. And let's see, any restrictions? I'm trying to think.
If you find that out, let us know, because it'll be helpful for us to be aware that.
No problem.
You may know, waiting on the waiting list to River Street Shelter immunizes you from the camping.
There was a bed available for my daughter, which I was so excited about, because she's at that age right now, 16 years old, where she could literally be in the River Street Shelter with me, across from me, with other nice, warm...
And what happened?
And so I needed to give my mom a call on my roommate's, Robbie's, cell phone.
Were you able to do that?
I was hoping that I could get a hold of of the family so that they could send Emily down here to spend the night with me at River Street.
We hope they can, too.
I pointed that out to them many times that I thought that they should, you know. So I appreciate your report on all this news.
And we've been talking with?
Sierra Dawn Lupoy, Sierra Shanti Ananda.
Thank you, Sierra. Should be on free radio Thursday night, assuming that I'm at liberty.
Hey, do you ever listen to...
So I'm talking with a man who's eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Folks, are you going to be... meeting soon.
Okay. Are you going to be staying the night? Or?
Yes, I am.
And have you tried this before, or is this your first time?
This is my first time.
Well, my best wishes to you, and hope you can stay awake with all the security
there.
We have around here.
Cameras! Over
yeah,
there!
It's pretty
Cameras.
Tight.
What's your name?
Jeff.
I'm Robert Jeff. Cheers. All right. Bill Posner is the General Assembly here.
This is important stuff, you guys.
Helpful guidelines, Freedom Sleeper sponsored events and sleep-ins. So let's begin by reminding ourselves that the major purpose of this sleep-in. The major purpose of this sleep-in is to protest the ordinance that exists prohibiting individuals from sleeping in public places. That's why we're here. In that context, we believe that civil disobedience is a proper expression of freedom. And we believe that we need to put pressure on the city for them to revoke or to get rid of the ordinance. We are not here, and I think this is the general consensus as I will read this to you, to harass the police or to be obnoxious. On the other hand, we clearly have rights of freedom of expression. So, before I read the, maybe I should read the guidelines, and then we'll open the floor to both discussions about the guidelines
Bill.
And anything else that we want to talk about. And Abby is going to be
a little farther here.
Are we
going to
have an agenda?
Well, let's create the agenda first.
Abby, you need to do the agenda first.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Bill, would you like me to read them? I can...
And what you hear is what you will hear some new version of if you come next Tuesday. I guess it'll be today is the 3rd, so it'll be the 8th, I guess, September 8th. And there actually is going to be a full-fledged city council meeting before this, or it'll be happening simultaneously. City council meets generally at 3:00 in the afternoon. At least the open session is, and then sometimes has a second session at 7:00 at night. Oral communication, the period when the public is actually allowed to speak on subjects very briefly that it wants to, that aren't on the city's agenda, is at 5:00. And we generally begin activity at 5 or 6 on City Council Tuesdays, which is every second and fourth Tuesday. We're there a little early, and we try to Freedom Sleepers try to get in words, kind of update the community on what we're doing, encourage the council to stop its systematic institutional violation of the rights of poor and homeless people. That is to say, allow people to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere or somewheres, to say the least. So the General Assembly is a process by which people who have gathered there can give input as to what they expect for the night, what they want to do, maybe cook up some possible strategies, ask for whatever support they need, and come up with a sense of taking care of each other in this situation. And a lot of this is very spontaneous and depends upon the behavior and the desires of the homeless people who show up, because they're the majority of people who sleep out there. And there are some who say, oh, you see, these house people are leading the homeless people and throwing them under the bus and making them all get tickets. And that's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to make anybody get any tickets. The idea, though, is to take back space that has been taken away by the authorities of the community in order to drive away homeless people. and also discourage protesters from protesting peacefully about this. And homeless people face ticketing every night. Although it has been suggested by some activists that the best thing to do is to support, instead of what we're doing, support Sub Rosa, sort of below the firing line, kind of quiet support encampments with, lookouts or porta potties, and that's not so, low key and low profile, but trash pickups, that sort of thing, and abandon the attempt to try to persuade a fundamentally ethically challenged city council for doing anything until such time as we actually get some traction with either other cities or courts and so forth. Let's interrupt for this caller. Yo, caller, you're on free radio. What's your name?
This is David. I'm calling. If the city council really doesn't see how, like, targeting people politically is not... it goes against the Constitution, and it goes against all reasonable ideas about human rights, like to focus on people that are doing political stuff. If the people don't want to see homeless people around, then build houses for them so they can go inside. Not to be flippant, but the police. I saw some of the photos on Indy Bay, Santa Cruz, and it was way overboard with the police. I mean, there was a photo of you, which I can't find anymore on there, of them around you, and it was really intimidating. And I, I mean, I went to a city council meeting here where I live once, and it was the first time I went when I moved here, and it just happened to be the same day as they were promoting a police officer to a lieutenant, so they were all there, like the whole four. It was very intimidating. Just like not even facing them, adversarial, or it shouldn't even be adversarial. It's ridiculous.
Of course, I agree with you, and I think I saw that photo too. I'm not sure. You said you saw it originally on the Indie Bay story that Zav wrote, or?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then it disappeared.
Well,
it might not disappear. I just couldn't find it.
Well, I looked for it just now, and I couldn't find it either. But in any case,
it was a very telling picture, actually. A scary, not that we should be scared or anything, but it's very intimidating. It really is, and it's a shame. And if people in government can't see how this goes against basic human rights, then
remember, unfortunately, a lot of this media that you're talking about isn't the Santa Cruz Sentinel. They don't cover it. And, they probably aren't going to be covering it. They didn't. It took us, I don't think we ever really got Sentinel coverage of the Peace Camp 2010. We might have. We had a guy who was working 24 hours a day to get us coverage, Kerbugger Chris, I called him, Chris Doyen, also known as Commander X later. He joined, was a part of Anonymous, who engaged in guerrilla actions against large institutions that were, I think, worthy of that kind of action. But media, Sentinel, is generally not just not interested in us. They wish to white us out, I think, frankly. Although I don't, I haven't had conversations with the editor recently. And I think go ahead.
It's hard to say. I mean, when you deal with people who deal with the business class, it seems, or the merchants, they think that they're doing something so special. They're sacrificing, so much. I mean, people go to work and do jobs where they sacrifice their health and lives, I just don't think it's fair. Well, but that's the way it is. How we're supposed to feel sorry for businesses, or there's some special reason why, but I suppose that goes against, certain capitalist ideas or ideas of,
Well, I think that, the claim of some city council members who are well, who talk the homeless talk but don't walk the homeless walk, so to speak, mm-hmm. is that, you know, well, you need this tax base in order to provide the services, to provide the wonderful shelter and other things that the what I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or Encompass, now run by the former boss of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, Monica Martinez, are providing. In fact, you know, I acknowledge they provide a small number of services to a small number of people, and now an even smaller number of services. But they're really, you know, into the business of grabbing grants from the federal government that they can use in their particular programs, which are not without merit, but, you know, they are not. You don't find these people advocating for civil rights for homeless people. Although, you know, I have to say, in attempting to find out what the qualifications are for the River Street Shelter, which is, you may have heard earlier in the show, if you're on the River Street Shelter waiting list, that is supposed to immunize you at least from camping tickets, not from the tickets we got at City Hall, which is being in a closed area after dark. And you might say, in theory, homeless people can avoid that, but they still get camping tickets galore, and they have been getting camping tickets all over the place. And it's increased, I think, rather than diminished, although I don't have any really clear comparisons. I should be graphing that over the last 5 years, and I haven't done that recently, or at all, actually, in any consistent way. But River Street Shelter, even though I have not yet been able to find out the specific qualifications, now does tell people if you are on the waiting list, you will be exempted from camping tickets. But in order to do that, they have to send your name to the city attorney's office. If you don't want your name sent, we won't send it. Of course, you won't get exempted either, I think.
A city attorney has time to be the homeless, you know, take care of the homeless and do everything else.
Well, the city attorney is concerned about liability, is his deal, you know, and I think given the fact that in large cities the courts have found that you can't ticket people for sleeping unless you have legal places for them to go, and the city has admitted for years, forever actually, that it has no place for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to sleep at night legally, either in the state of shelter or outside, inside the city limits. So
well, that's the way it is in so many parts of the United States.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah. But the idea then that you can criminalize people for doing something that all of us have to do every night after 11 o'clock at night is repugnant to most of us, and that's, mm-hmm. of course, what we're protesting. And, of course, the amount of police that they're using and that you see in these photos is an indication.
It's obvious of political. It's so obviously peaceful. I mean, there's no crime going on.
Right, but of course, what those who are supportive of it will tell you is they're violating the law, and they should be made to stop violating the law. This is the same kind of rhetoric that's used by
the
city council.
Let's talk about the law here. I mean, let's vote on it. I mean, like, I'm serious. Like, I'm curious to see like, exactly how some of these things would pan out, because you hear how polls of Americans, you know, who oppose the Iraq war, who want the Iranian deal to go through, with the nuclear deal to pass, you know, and ask the Santa Cruzans, you know, and then you can seriously look at yourself.
I'm all for that, too.
And like ourselves, sure. You know.
Yeah, the difficulty arises is that the voting is often manipulated and controlled by media that frames the issues,
media, I know.
And that's done with money. And money, as you know, is a potent determiner of opinion. But you never can tell. In smaller venues like Santa Cruz, you might have an effective remedy there, although I think they tried to vote in rent control back in 1982, and they failed. They tried it a couple previous times, but they haven't tried it since. So, you know, we have more renters now. Things are worse, so maybe things would get better. Anyway, mm-hmm. David, I appreciate your call. Any final words?
And, well, I don't think it's even too radical now, like when we talk about policing. Is it too, and the amount of violence that goes on and and with the economic crises and so on, there's bound to be more, conflicts, political, you know, rich and poor. And to say that police shouldn't even have guns, in my opinion,
I think
that's a totally reasonable thing to ask for. Mm-hmm. I mean, and
But
I really do.
I hear you. I'm going to
no
leave it there, though.
I see no reason for a policeman to have a gun. I really don't.
I hear you.
None at all.
Well, wait, of course, arming the homeless is another option, but we'll talk about that one later.
Mm, all right.
Thanks
thank
for calling
you.
In, man. And thank you.
All right,
come to
night.
The next
Bye.
Protest if you'd like.
I'll try.
All righty, man. We'll see if you show up, David. So, you tuned to Free Radio, 427-3772. That'll be good. If you want to call in, you can. Yeah, some of the photos, and that's why I'm always urging my erstwhile UCSC camera people, video journalists, to get shots out of the last few protests onto the public record. I mean, we have huge, massive overreactions of police. Even before these protests started, when we were trying to feed people at the corner of Highway 1 and Highway 9, we had the ridiculous spectacle of squad car after squad car lined up. The police chief was there. The highway patrol was there. I mean, you know, even rumors with the sheriffs were, you know, somewhere in the vicinity. I don't know. I don't know about that, actually. And, you know, we've got all kinds of video, but none of it shows up. So one of our problems is we don't have the organization and the person power to really get this done in a timely manner. And there are a lot of people. I mean, our photographers have not only taken photos, but they've taken tickets and they've actually been arrested and dragged off to jail. In fact, the first arrest was for Israel, who was still, you know, persistently following this whole event and, you know, I don't know, I wouldn't say he's necessarily ruining his health, but he's certainly losing a lot of sleep there as he stays there overnight with his wife and with all the rest of us. So if you think you want to help this protest, call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's one place you can go to help the Freedom Sleepers. It's not the official line for the Freedom Sleepers. It's the line. It's my phone and the phone for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. But I will pass on any calls to Freedom Sleepers. I think they have a longer number, a Food Not Bombs number, which I will also be giving out later if people want it. But you can help. You don't even have to come to a protest. Actually, David, your call, just both Davids, your calls do help. Your expressions of opinion are important. Write a letter to the paper, however futile it may seem. We're getting numerous right-wing letters. We got with one today from Bob LaMonica, I believe. He was denouncing the, I don't know what to call them, the freedom markers, you might call them, the people who hit the sidewalks and tried to respond to the city's attempt to constrict performance space and vending space and free speech space on downtown Avenue sidewalks to a shrinking point by adding additional performance pens or performance boxes. And the result was they were arrested and charged with vandalism, or at least somebody, two activists were arrested and charged with vandalism, Keith and Abby, and although the charges have been lessened, this is an example of the kind of repression that the city is using. Who knows? Maybe just in a robotic way, following some sort of national template. I mean, the Occupy movement was crushed in this way. We don't have an Occupy movement anymore, but we do have people who remember it, who are in authority, who want to, I think, stop that kind of thing from happening again. And I think there are protests going on in San Francisco. I've heard that that, but I haven't yet researched it. I kind of get lost in what's going on here. In any case, let's get back to last Tuesday's Freedom Sleep and see what kind of stuff has made it into my little machine here.
Okay, so the first thing that we need to do is have people suggest agenda items.
And I'm not going to go through the agenda situation because it's interesting, but it's lengthy, and our time is limited. If you want to see how a General Assembly works, you might have been perhaps part of the Occupy movement when that's where this all came out of. I'm going to skip ahead to the arrival of the police setting up the Klieg lights. Actually, the Klieg lights are already set up. I should say turning on the Klieg lights. And some various interviews around that time from people that are sort of were there at the time and also were a part of the Freedom Sleepout.
It's about 7:20, and I'm talking with
Zachariah Bird.
And Zachariah, you say last night there was a rape that took place?
Yes.
Who got raped?
I do not know. A lady with a passport.
And how do you know that this person got raped?
Because she was talking to about six different cops, including a sergeant.
So she was filing a report about a rape?
Yes, in public.
And at what time did this happen?
Anywhere between 11:30 and 2.
Okay. And this is, where did this happen?
From what I understand, from the conversation between her and the officers and sergeant, it took place on the levee, and they were interrogating her in public, again, in public, at the Taco Bell on the corner of Pacific and Laurel.
How many cops were involved?
There was about six or seven. And undercover cars were going towards where I guess it allegedly happened.
Were any female police officers involved?
No.
Did you know the woman?
No.
And did you have any contact or communication with her?
No.
And so you didn't really hear the conversation?
Yes, I did.
What was the nature of the conversation?
The nature of the conversation was she was crying. Cops were trying to find out what happened. Supposedly she got raped by an African-American man with long black hair about pectorals length.
Someone she knew or a stranger?
A stranger. She was on the levee. She got grabbed from behind by the neck, thrown down, and then drug into the bushes, and then violated.
So how were the police, do you think, helpful or not? What was your sense of that?
I am not sure. I was waiting outside with another individual, waiting for another individual inside coming out with some soda, and I was listening, and they kicked us off the Taco Bell property. We obliged. Went across the street, waited for our soda. Our soda came. We started drinking the soda, conversating. They walked across the street, and they said to get the fuck out of downtown for the rest of the night. We asked why. They said, because you are interfering with the police investigation, and you are obstructing justice, and you are...
Were you interfering and obstructing?
I do not feel that I was. I was standing across the street from where an investigation was happening, drinking soda, trying to keep the noise level of the two partied company that was with me at the time, trying to keep the noise level down. That way they did not come over and harass us.
Fair enough. Now, why did you bring this up yourself?
Because... they told us to get the hell or fuck off of downtown property. I said, no, I don't have to. This is a public area. They said you were in blah, 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 interfering. I said, how am I interfering? I'm across the street drinking soda. They said you were being too loud. I said, I was not being too loud. Two other individuals were being too loud that I do not know the names of, and I... Me and two other individuals were over here drinking soda when...
What was their response to this?
Being loud.
Did they leave you in peace, or did they...
They arrested me for obstructing justice for a 148 A1.
Name of the cop who did this?
I do not have the police report, and he refused to give me his name, and he refused to give me a receipt for my backpack, my fire pot, and the clothes and soap and toothbrush and toothpaste that I had in my backpack.
Right. And you were released this morning, or?
I was released 45 minutes to an hour later.
You have a court date?
I do. It's on the 13th of this month of September.
Wow. Not much I can do for you except, of course, put out the word that it happened.
Okay.
Not much.
The reason why I am bringing this up is, A, I feel that it was... completely disregard of conduct by the cops. I also believe that it was disregard of the code to which they are supposed to go by not by not taking this female downtown or calling an ambulance or anything for that matter. And secondly, it was totally just to get us away from the area so they could find, so they found any reason to lock me up.
Yeah, no, I mean, I suspect you could well be right. But you don't know the name of the officers involved. And do you recognize any of them?
I would recognize them if I seen their face, yes.
How long have you been around town?
I've been coming here on and off since 2006, most recently for 2 years.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with?
Zachariah Bird.
Thank you, Zachariah. Could be on Free Radio Thursday night.
Okay.
Not that that makes a hell of a lot of difference. Linda LeMaster, here you are, wandering around late at night outside. You're in a fragile condition, having recovered from a knee surgery, yet here you are out here. What are you doing out here? I mean,
well, this is where I heard people who are homeless and their allies were, and I got a way, thanks to Laura, to get down here, so here I am.
Welcome.
What are you doing here?
I keep asking myself.
Oh, you don't know?
I'm getting a little sleepy, I can tell you that.
Oh, well, I see you brought your robe. Did you bring a blanket?
I have a sleeping bag in the car.
Oh, well, that's legal to have a sleeping bag in the car. But these guys are criminals. Yep. All these blankets, all these little tents.
Not yet.
They look like occupied posters.
No, they're not criminal yet. But they will be after 10 o'clock, which is coming up in 2 hours.
Okay, they're not criminals yet.
Not yet. No, I mean, they have a little time before. They could repent and go hide in the bushes, prep.
And just, you know, to clarify, there are two laws that are involved here. The one that's being used to ticket us is a law that allows, that requires you to be off of the city council courtyard area, which is the presumably public area around the whole city complex, and also off the library courtyard area as well. This law has never been voted on by the city council as a specific item. It's never been voted on by the community. It's based simply on the designation of the head of the Parks and Rec Department, Danette Shoemaker. It's called Municipal Code 13.04.011 for all you, numerologists. And we've gotten a dozen or more citations, probably two dozen citations by now, under this code. And the fine for it is $198. It's not cheap. We haven't paid yet. We're going to go to trial and try to challenge it. We're using numerous numerous sort of legal defenses you can use, but it's not so much that we have any kind of ironclad legal defense. This is a form of potential civil disobedience in the sense that we're really here to make it clear that what these laws are normally used for is to drive away homeless people from the Poganip, from the parks, from the levee, from city council areas at night, to and just essentially to make it so difficult and so uncomfortable for them that they leave town and go, quote, somewhere else, not in my backyard. And that is a sort of a fundamentally moral plague that we are facing. It's a kind of thing that happens when people are under economic pressure, or it happens when authorities want to pick a scapegoat group. In this case, authorities have been doing it for years, mostly on behalf of developers, and wealthy property owners, large corporations, and the Downtown Association. But there are now been militant groups from the right, such as Take Back Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz Neighbors, who have been putting particular pressure on the city council. They've been effectively organizing and voting people to city council, like Cynthia Matthews, Lynn Robinson, Pamela Comstock, David Chirassis, I would even say Cynthia Chase, who are, in fact, their proxies in these situations to pass anti-homeless laws, to support anti-homeless policies. Not always, you know, not uniformly, but with sufficient force and persistence that the picture becomes pretty clear. Let's hear some more from Linda LeMaster. Linda's been on the show before, for those of you who are regularly listen. She's the head of the former Homeless Issues Task Force. She heads a group called Housing Now in Santa Cruz. And she's been homeless herself. She's raised children as a homeless woman. She's housed now.
Perhaps they'll do that.
Yeah, because whether this is a crime or not depends on what time of day it is. That's what kind of anti-homeless laws we have.
You have such harsh words for our founding mothers and fathers of the city.
No, I don't mean to diss them any more than their forebears. I think that people that think they can coerce you to behave differently than what is natural and necessary are ignorant. You can tell them I said that if you want.
Well, it'll be on the radio. America will know, actually.
I think America was ahead of me in realizing most of these electeds we have are ignorant.
Perhaps. Hard to say, but sometimes, you know, those who strive to be a part of the power structure become suborned and seduced by it.
I take that as a little silver-tongued affront.
Yes.
You're smacking me.
As it was intended.
We're trying to change things from how they are when they're wrong.
Breaking within the system, as I heard it before.
Well, did you hear that from me? Not in the last 2 decades.
I've seen that from you. I've not only heard it from you. I've observed you.
So you're jumping to
continuum of care woman wandering every fucking meeting.
But I'm not working within to change it unless they let me sign a text. I'm working to expose to the people that are sitting there what they're forgetting.
To the people who are sitting there, that's the problem.
The people that run the nonprofits here and some of the
You're
county people.
Educate them. Yeah, that's like trying to educate Mike Opposer.
They don't have to walk outside and meet someone homeless. You've got to go in there where they're at. That's how I feel.
Yeah, well, you have naive notions, even after all these years.
I think it takes all kinds of kitty cats and dogs to make a community.
All kinds of people to make up a world. All kinds of people and things. That's what they say.
And we need them to wake up all at the same time because homelessness kills.
No, we have to go to sleep. That's the idea. Sleeping is a ban.
We get to go to sleep. And all these sleeping dogs at work need to wake up.
Sleeping ban.
I didn't mean to call them dogs.
Indeed. We've been talking with
Linda. Lighthouse Linda.
Thank you, Lighthouse Linda. It's now about 8 o'clock, and we have bedding is laid out, and pooches are barking, and people are still eating food and relaxing. I'm walking with Israel, that cameraman extraordinaire.
And Steve Plaich.
And Steve Plaich.
Freedom sleeper extraordinaire.
Freedom sleeper, and legal schmeagle, or whatever you will, up to check out the agendas at the Santa Cruz City Hall, the entrances to the City Council.
Looking forward to the ever-exciting meetings of our local commissions, addressing the
issues
of the day.
Indeed.
Like the Sister Cities Commission, perhaps?
Oh, right.
Or Measure K?
The rare, hard-to-find Measure K Commission, right.
We could never get a quorum.
Now, these are also the locked bathrooms are up here in this area. Let's see if they are locked. Yes, unfortunately, they're locked. Now, here are the agendas. And if we look...
Agenda is plural.
Notice, Wednesday, September 2nd, Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women.
Oh, that's a good one.
6:45. So this is an agenda which people might want to review. And it is within 72 hours of... Actually, it's within 26 hours of today, right now. We're at Tuesday, September 1st. That's one agenda.
Bernie Escalante is the Santa Cruz Police liaison to that?
He's the man. And here's another one. The Planning Commission has a meeting on Thursday night, which is a little bit further away, but still within the required 72-hour time.
And I probably mention it later on, and I've mentioned it many times, but the Brown Act, the act that covers meetings that are public and are require agendas because they are held by or authorized by or influenced in some significant organized way, funded by perhaps taxpayers and city officials and other government officials, require that their agendas be posted. They be posted in a public and accessible place, that the posting be accessible 24 hours a day, and that those postings be readable and accessible for a 72-hour continuous period before the actual meeting. And these agendas that we were looking at were of events that were happening the next day or the day after, hence they were certainly within the 72 hours. We were looking at them around 8 o'clock in the evening. But the point is that at 10 o'clock, this entire area closes down, according to the little signs posted around the area, that, as I said, were created to drive away protesters and homeless people. And that is a violation of the Public Records Act. Of course, they could easily deal with it by just setting up a stand outside the city hall on the sidewalk where you could look at the agendas if they wanted to do that. They're either too lazy or too cheap or too indifferent to do it, or you might say the community is sufficiently indifferent. I mean, I've raised the issue many times, but it was only on that night that I actually went to jail around that issue, partially around that issue, as I think you'll hear. So again, you're tuned to Free Radio. Bathrobe Spears Broadsides is the name of this show. 101.3 FM is where we're broadcasting. This is the first of the last six shows that I'll be doing on Free Radio, unless somebody gets the $300 reward for finding us a studio space where we can go and stuff our equipment and do our actually studio work. We don't actually won't be broadcasting from there probably, but we will be there doing our work and have a place to go. But since that hasn't happened yet, I'm pretty much assuming the countdown is in progress. And this is the first of the last six shows. You can call in, be a part of this historical last of the six at 427-3772.
And I believe those, as I remember, were the only...
Your good friend Mark Premack is on that?
Mark Premack, my buddy, that's correct. Here the zoning administrator has a meeting on Wednesday. So there are three different groups that are meeting, or three different meetings that are agendized, at least. I don't see any others offhand.
And you'll be attending all of them,
Don't know, but I certainly would like to examine the agenda a number of times. So if you want to, Israel, I encourage you to video this agenda, the Commission of Prevention of Violence Against Women, this agenda, the Planning Commission meeting, and then the agenda over here, the Zoning Administrator regular meeting. That's my suggestion.
So it's about 8:15.
And it's interesting. You'll hear my... Eventually, I think you'll hear my brief comments before I was arrested, and the audio device I had, I passed off to somebody else, and that was about it in terms of any further coverage of the arrest. But it's really hard, and I for those protesters who want to use a strategy when dealing with an officer to advise them, look, here's the Brown Act, look at it, here are the agendas. You have to keep these agendas available. Here's these access ways through the so-called park, as you like to call it, but it isn't a park, really. It's just it's the center of the seat of government. It has some grass, and it has a fountain, but the word park is... Well, in any case, it's an area you should not be able to close at night, and certainly you shouldn't be forcing people away from the center of the city of government, particularly given the actual wording of the ordinances. But this, if you want to do this, if you want to bring these issues to the police right before they arrest you, you better rehearse it very carefully and actually role play it with people, because your mind goes, mine anyway, it goes in many different directions, and you'll hear that perhaps a bit later. Let's hear some more. Again, this is from the evening of September 1st, I believe. Let's see. Today is the 3rd, the 2nd. Yeah, it was the 1st. It was the evening, late evening of September 1st.
Police station wagon here is apparently setting up the harassment lights. We have two police officers on public time, well-armed, who are opening up lights for the throw lights on the sleepers. There are already some people over here on this side who appear to be trying to sleep. That's the whole point. You got the idea.
I guess I figured it out.
Yes.
Actually, oh, I thought they were giving us a nightlight.
I
felt
nothing. Really, I want somebody to get those, but you guys can't help me find a spot.
Good point.
So we have we're over in front of the Civic Auditorium, actually on the other side of the street from the Civic.
No more shelter beds?
And officers, yes, lots of lights, but no shelter. And the officer is cranking up the high power intensity lights to, again, discourage a political protest. Police officers should not be engaged in this kind of political activity. But in Santa Cruz, they do what they're told. I mean, you got to bring home the bacon, I guess. And the Genie TML 4000N lights are going up. And we're getting a few sarcastic comments from local homeless folks who are going to be kept awake by these lights, or at least that's the purpose of these. We have first alarm guy and two officers are engaging in cranking up the lights. Interesting.
And it should be noted, if I didn't say so already, that in the past previous seven protests, occasionally we get a first alarm person who'd come around and observe the situation and leave, even occasionally attempt to wake sleepers up and say, you can't be here, at which point we would, many of us would just approach him and say, where should they go? You know, what's your name? What's going on here? Why don't you stop harassing this guy? And the first alarm guy would call the police, and then later the police would come and they would ask us to leave the park, and they would give a few tickets and they would leave. This time there were three or four first alarm security guards. There were these massive array of lights. There was a no parking zone set up all around the protest. And when the police did arrive, it was in strong numbers, as it had been in the previous evenings, but it was an immediate ticketing of people with no leave the park areas. Just get out of here. They didn't stop to determine if people had been warned or if people had been there before that I'm aware of. They simply began citing people. And in fact, I got cited when I was standing on the sidewalk in an area that is outside the park. Although I had previously been in the park, and as I felt I had a right to be, because, as I said, accessing agendas, there's another aspect of it, which is the law that says you can walk through a park on one of the pathways that are marked and designated to go through the park, of which there were several, although none specifically designated in a written form, but it seemed pretty obvious that's what they're for. And, of course, this being the center of the seat of government, these are the kinds of notions that impel us to believe we can be in that particular spot. But the reason we're there is to establish the rights of homeless people to sleep somewhere and to point out to the city that they can't criminalize homeless people, that we're going to establish an area where we encourage people to come and sleep. Eventually, people began sleeping along the sidewalk where, as I understand it, they were not ticketed, although who knows what's going to happen next Tuesday. We'll have to see what goes on then as situation perhaps escalates. We'll see.
We also have a couple of photographers taking pictures. Alex DeRosi, Indie Bay photographer, who's doing this. And these are also the same kind of lights, I suspect, that are put up New Year's, Halloween, and 4th of July. When there are large crowds downtown. And it's...
Of course, the difference on those occasions is, on those three holidays, there are thousands of people downtown. It can also be annoying to have these huge lights, and they do seem to have a somewhat intimidating aspect as well. But they have more justification because there can be problems that arise with alcohol, problems that arise with some kind of other incident. But there were no problems reported, as far as I know, in the previous seven protests that happened at City Hall. So this was a gratuitous move to, seems like, drive away a political protest.
Interesting. I guess none of us are really asking what's going on here. So what's the purpose of these lights, guys? What's the purpose of these lights?
I do, Robert.
What's the purpose of these lights, guys?
What do you think the purpose of lights are usually?
Why are you setting them up today? What's the reason? Notice I've asked the officer in a courteous tone of voice a reasonable question, and I'm not yet getting an answer. I'll try for a fourth time. Guys, what's the purpose of these lights? And the two officers in question, okay, I'll simply have to ask if they identify themselves.
Yes, sir.
And I wouldn't want to interfere with their good work here. But if you don't want to answer my question, maybe I can get your superior to do that. What's his name? Surely you're not refusing to give me your superior's name. Can I get a photographer in here to take a picture of these guys? Because I can't quite get the badge numbers and names here. Guys, are you going to give me your names and badge numbers? Or do we? Yes, but your obligation is to essentially say who you are when asked, is it not? Well, let me. I'll read your badge. I have to get a little closer. I got to tell you, I'm nearsighted.
You step away from me. Thank you.
Can you tell me your name?
You know my name.
I don't know your name, actually.
Lieutenant Lamas.
Thank you very much. No, I mean, I certainly have met you before, Lieutenant, and I remember us from past occasions, but I apologize for not remembering your name. When you get to be my age, maybe you will find a similar situation. So we have a lieutenant and a sergeant setting up a set of harassment lights, although they're not really clear. Maybe they have some other purpose. Maybe there's another... Lieutenant, is there any purpose to these lights specifically that you care to let the public in on? And again, I'm being ignored by Lieutenant Lamas and his sergeant next to him. It's again, a simple question, guys. What's the purpose of these lights?
And this kind of arrogant refusal to answer a simple question, which they could do, or even provide, you know, a pretext, some even semblance of politeness or courtesy, or even following, I'm sure, police general orders to identify yourself when asked. They're not making an arrest. They can say, wait till we're finished and we'll talk to you about it or something. Nothing. And this is to kind of fit the mood of the officers on Tuesday night during this eighth protest. They were harsh. They were unresponsive. They did not give information when asked. And they gave out lots of citations and made two arrests for being in a public area that they had successfully gotten people to leave. That wasn't enough for them. Their attempt is to not just get people to leave, but to punish them so they don't return to this area. People who had done no damage to the area, people who had created no public problem, people who were engaged in First Amendment activity, the right to petition their government to change the infamous sleeping ban ordinance. People who were providing a place by being present when other people were there and being in solidarity with them for homeless people to go now that there is absolutely zero emergency shelter with the closing of the mini shelters at the Paul Lee Loft. I guess the River Street shelter theoretically has a few beds there, but we're talking 1,500 to 2,000 people. And at least that night, there were I counted at least 35 people there. At least half of them were homeless. And these folks have no legal place to go. They have no. Some of them are women. Some of them were younger people with no place to go. Some of them were older people with health problems. No place to go. Instead of any kind of assistance, police are driving them off into the sidewalk, giving them citations they can't pay, and treating them in what has to say, if not a physically abusive manner, a rude and offensive manner, and also a manner that is abusive and that it denies basic constitutional rights. My experience with Lieutenant Lamas, who I did not recognize until he actually told me his name, it was dark. While the lights were on us, we couldn't see them very well. Although I think I knew the other cop, too, the sergeant who was with him. Lamas is the man who broke the arm of an elderly woman, Diana Dice, back in 2007. You'll find this case described in detail on Santa Cruz Indy Media. Look up D-E-I-S-S, Donna Dice, or Lieutenant Lamas, Christian Lamas, capital L-E, capital M-O-S-S. He, at that time, I believe he was a sergeant, might have even been an officer. Of course, he's been promoted since. And what he did was, in order to investigate a complaint of marijuana being smoked by a woman who had a marijuana card, he, through excessive use of force, fractured her arm. And it became a cause célèbre. I believe she recovered some money from the city for it. But, of course, as far as I know, he never received any kind of clear discipline for what he did. And he doesn't seem to have learned anything since, at least in terms of his behavior on Tuesday night around the issue of appropriate public behavior. You know, it's often in Santa Cruz you'll get the smiley, friendly fascism approach. It didn't even bother with that on Tuesday night.
That's about the fifth time I've asked. I would like folks to note. Wow. Ah! To make noise.
Diesel.
That should keep people awake.
Wow.
That's the generator starting up.
Old way.
Old but tried and true if you want to harass people who are sleeping at night.
I wonder how's that thought.
Okay, having asked you five times and not gotten an answer, Lieutenant, your immediate superior's name, please, so I can write a letter of commendation for your failure to actually give me information that's reasonable. Okay, that's fine. I'm not getting an answer. That's how it goes. Hey, it's a construction project. Max. Max Green has arrived.
You're here for the ceremonial lighting and the lights moving. You know, we can get out.
Well,
now we just got to speak to love.
Right.
Max Green is a Monterey activist, one of the Monterey Eight, who is facing charges for blocking the freeway in Monterey, a case similar to the Santa Cruz Six. I think they're called the Monterey Eight, or maybe they're called the Highway Eight, I'm not sure. They, in solidarity with Black Lives Matter and students across the state trying to stop the extortionate and austerity-ish type measures being used to penurize students, turn them into lifelong debtors, blocked freeways. When this has happened in the past, there have been police actions, people have been charged with things. This time, they're trying to screw people over financially. And that's a whole new approach. In any case, Max has come down several times. And in fact, tomorrow he'll be part of another protest happening in Monterey. A monthly sitting ban approach. Monterey has evolved its own copycat version of the Santa Cruz sitting ban, which is a law that criminalizes people from sitting near a building, even if the store is closed, even if there's a brick wall there, anywhere near buildings up and down in Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue and other business districts. It's illegal to sit down on the sidewalk, even if you're not blocking it. In Santa Cruz, this is particularly obvious, the strategy, because the sidewalks are huge, they're very large, and there's no need to criminalize people sitting next to a building. But that's what they did, based upon the merchant concern to drive away poor and homeless people, and under some other pretext. In Palo Alto, they called it a trip and fall hazard, although they could produce no evidence that anybody was tripping or falling. In Monterey, it was beaten back 1 year, the entire sitting ban, but the next year, this year, it appeared and it was passed. And every the first Friday of every month, activists in Monterey have been going down and just saying no to this and sitting down. They get a citation. In Monterey, the law is milder than it is in Santa Cruz. If you only get one citation a month, you don't get any kind of fine or other penalty. Of course, what I said to Max was, how the hell does this help homeless people who are driven away unless you can actually get enough people to regularly sit down and force the police to realize they can't get away with this kind of ticketing? We did that in Santa Cruz in 1994 when there was a massive protest against the first sitting ban law in Santa Cruz. We had hundreds of people on the streets. Food Not Bombs at that time, a younger Food Not Bombs, led the demonstrations. They happened initially at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific, near what is now Taqueria Vallarta. And then it was the parking lot created when the old Ford's department store was torn down after the earthquake. And the police arrested people, one person after person after person, and they gave up because 39 people and more sat down after that. It was a very heartening example of civil disobedience. And there's still some old-timers like, I guess, Phil Posner, who wasn't there during that round of civil disobedience, but he was there, of course, during freedom demonstrations in the South during the early 60s, hence our name Freedom Sleepers, which he didn't create, but was created by some of us in, we're stealing the Freedom Riders, and we're also giving an acknowledgement to the man who's one of the main organizers, Phil Posner, because he was a Freedom Sleeper. Anyway, tomorrow, Monterey has this protest at 4 o'clock. In front of, I believe it's Walgreens. And it's on Alvarado Street if you want to go down there and check it out. Who knows? I may make my way down there. I've been down there for two of those protests. Again, I'm a little wary of that, not because it's a bad protest, but because, well, there may be other things I need to do, like we have the latest issue of Street Spirit, which has, I think, some coverage of the Freedom Sleepers will be coming out. Street Spirit publication is a monthly publication by the American Friends Service Committee, which is sold mostly in the Bay Area, occasionally here in Santa Cruz by homeless people as a funding source. You can also find it at the Sub Rosa Cafe, and that's at 703 Pacific. Or you can find it if you get a hold of me. I'm a guy with a car that's one of the few cars in Santa Cruz is covered with bumper stickers. If you see a car covered with bumper stickers, it's likely to be my car. And ask me for some Street Spirits, particularly if you're poor and homeless, and I'll give you a bunch. If you're not, you can take one and then go give a dollar to a homeless person. That's what they're for. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is the show number one, the last of six on Free Radio Santa Cruz, as we kind of approach the final hours of our 20-year station. We've been here for 20 years, and looks like we're kind of reaching the end of our rope. But you never can tell. As I've mentioned before, if you have any ideas of a studio that we might be able to move our equipment to prior to September 20th, because we have to do it by that time, we won't have to shut down, and you'll get $300. So give a call to 423-4833, 423-4833, if you'd like to give us some info. And you can also do that if you want to join the collective, even for the short amount of time left. Who knows? We may get it together and reopen at some point, though. I have found that it's difficult to do that with any momentum once you've closed down. We had that problem where we stopped broadcasting. We didn't lose our studio, but we lost our transmitter site. We actually didn't really lose it. We simply became anxious we were going to lose it, and I think improperly and inappropriately shut down out of fear that our transmitter would be seized. It wasn't, and we lost a number of broadcasters and many listeners, and we are a reduced station, but still in there, still pitching. Let's go back, though, to the Freedom Sleepers, who are also pitching, or at least I was going to say snoring, but in this case, you're listening to some audio of last Tuesday, the 1st. This is about the time when the Klieg lights were being set up, and I was trying to get some answers from police officers and not succeeding. Anyway, the lights have been set up, the diesel engine is rumbling, and fun is beginning. These two diligent officers are moving to harass another group of people in front of City Hall. But again, no answer to the question, why are you setting up lights at this particular point?
So we have two officers coming to set up harassment, lights, and noise. That's what's happening here, folks. When asked why they refuse to give a reasonable answer. In fact, they prefer to ignore the public. Not good.
How many lieutenants does it take to turn on the light bulb?
Go to sleep at night.
Okay. How many lieutenants does it take to turn on a light bulb?
Indeed.
Don't shine that thing in my eyes.
Now, how would these officers feel if folks came to their homes and shined lights in their windows while they were trying to sleep? I guess that's not really a question that really troubles them very deeply. It's all very technical. How can we get this machine into a position that harasses people in a speedy enough manner?
The human right just to go to sleep at night.
People have a human right just to go to sleep at night.
People have the human right just to go to sleep at night.
People have the human right just to go to sleep at night. People have the human right. So it's around 10 to 9. Police van is pulled up again. It's got another light it's setting up. I guess there are three of them, maybe more. This is the third set of lights, although this one is not turned on yet. And it is at the corner of Locust and Center Streets. The number of people here is not that many. A lot of the same familiar faces from Alex from before. The core group of freedom sleepers, passers-by, some hard rock homeless folks, and all brightly lit now in the red brick area in front of the city hall adjacent to the library. First alarm security guard is standing in front of the quartet of lights, and the other lights have yet to be turned on. A pot of coffee is brewing. Keith has got a coffee on. And I'm about to go get a bite to eat.
I think
so. It is almost 10 o'clock, and a small crew of us are going up to check out the city.
I just want to know where it's at.
City council. Yeah. City council agenda.
Council chambers doors.
Fox is snuggle in bed there.
They are.
And there's another majestic-looking dog tied to one of the lampposts halfway up the courtyard. Looks like Kevin and Max from Monterey, Pat. And what's your name?
Alex.
And Alex is our... We're all wandering over to the agenda to... So, Alex, these are the city council chambers here.
Mm-hmm.
And right to the... Over here is the city council. The agendas for the various committees and commissions that are, and the bathrooms that are closed and locked.
Here are the agendas.
And here are the agendas.
Look at them all.
So the relevant point is that if you look at this agenda, you go up to the date and you see it says September 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be tomorrow.
Right.
So tomorrow at 6:45. This is the agenda for the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. So there. So the Public Records or the Public Meetings Act says the public is supposed to be able to look at this agenda.
I'm gonna go look around out back a while.
Okay. Anytime.
24 hours a day.
That's 72-hour period before the item comes up.
Right.
And there's another one here. This is 7 o'clock on Thursday. So that's 48 hours away, but that's still within the 72-hour ambit.
So if it's within the 72-hour window, you're allowed to be here 24 hours a day.
Well, the police will not acknowledge that. The police, they get out of here.
But so we are, you know, we're kind of the civil disobedient type. We're likely to say, you know, bust us if you want, buddy. You might say, forget it.
Well, I'm a big man for civil disobedience. I really am. It got our country, and it made a lot of difference in our country.
Well, it depends on your. Yeah, no.
But I mean, can't they just say, well, this has to be posted?
This is the only place.
12 hours a day, or
well, that no. I mean, the state law is it has to be accessible 24 hours a day for a 72-hour period.
Uh-huh.
Now, whether they will respect that state law, it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
In the past,
when the police come, if you point that out, they don't care.
First of all, they don't care. I kept insisting, they said, well, go look at the agenda and leave. And I said, no, I want to take my time looking at the agenda. Plus, I should be allowed to be up here as many times during this period of time that I want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, move the agendas if you want it. I mean, actually, this is the seat of government. This is City Hall. You should be able to be here any time of the day or night,
sure,
you know, on the grounds. And that was the way it was until they tried to drive out homeless protesters 5 years ago.
So. Right, right.
And Steve there is looking at another agenda that is within 72 hours. Now, a lot of these aren't. A lot of these are older or further off or something like that.
And these newer generations, you know, so are police going to walk in here later on or what?
Uh-huh. So we're talking with, what's your name?
Alex.
And Alex, you say you're a teacher at UCSC?
A tutor.
Tutor.
Yeah.
And you're on, currently the UCSC is on vacation?
Yeah. Well, there's no call for tutors during the summer. but no, I will be much more active come next month.
I gotcha. And what brings you to this protest?
I don't like the way homeless people are treated. I just don't like it. I don't think it's fair. I don't think I think there's an unfair bias against homeless people. I think that they're generalized as criminals, as mentally incompetent, as emotionally discharged, and they're lumped in with other people that are genuinely
a real problem.
Temporarily displaced.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? I think they're just looked upon as lesser people in general.
Yeah, that's what I find too. You yourself are unhoused?
Pardon?
You're outside?
Yeah, temporarily till next week.
And so you would probably be sleeping here or trying to sleep here?
Anywhere for another week. Yeah.
But
and I try not to, you know, try to just sleep somewhere where I won't bother anybody, or I don't make a mess. I don't throw beer bottles around or whiskey bottles around or empty pizza boxes around or
right.
I don't do anything like
falling asleep myself here.
You know. I don't do anything like that, but at the same time, if you have to save X amount of dollars to do your first and last and your deposit on a new place to live, you can't pay for a motel room. You have to sleep somewhere.
It's
you
true.
You have to sleep somewhere. And a lot of other people don't even have my luck, you know.
And we've been talking with
Alex Johnson.
Thank you, Alex. It's now about 20 to 11, and I'm talking with
Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food on Bombs.
Indeed. And Keith, you said this afternoon you were in Department 10
supporting the two artists, Alex Skelton and Joff Jones.
Yes, Alex.
And they were there to try to disqualify Commissioner Baskett. But you say that you were the only supporter.
Yeah, I was the only supporter there, unfortunately. And I had to leave because I'm cooking here and at the sleep out. So I left at, you know, after 2. And
these are two artists who I've talked about extensively in previous shows and interviewed. They refused to limit their displaying of art in front of Forever 21 downtown on Pacific Avenue to within the what were previously the blue bracketed areas, or blue boxes as they're called. They were arrested, taken to court, given court citations for, I think they said $240, somebody used that figure, and have yet to take the case to trial, but they did go in to disqualify the commissioner, Kim Baskett, in the Department 10, who I generally encourage people to do. And Keith McHenry went down there on Tuesday to be a supporter to them. Apparently he was the only one in court, but it was, again, they had to sit around and wait until she, well, you'll hear more from Keith.
I suppose, or maybe, yeah, but I tried to get here by 3 because I was like, oh my God, that's crazy.
So were Alex and Joff in historical garb?
Yeah, they were very well dressed, very dapper, and totally looked like
powdered wigs.
Yep, they had the wigs and the whole nine yards. It looked really nice. I mean, their kind of version of wigs, which is pieces of paper and stuff, which is looked really cool. And and they were there to. They asked if it was appropriate. Alex got up and asked if it was appropriate venue for a First Amendment challenge.
Which point?
She said, yes, this is exactly the right
lying bitch that she
is.
And she's, we should say that they were dressed as Ben Franklin and George Washington.
It was really terrible. And then after that, there was like a, you know, then he had to sit down. And then they end up being the last, I think. They were like 9 and 10, you know, line 9 and 10.
Did you see anything interesting happen in the court?
No, it was horribly boring. It was like a bunch of cops dismissed cases, and so people left, you know, rich-looking people left. And then a cop testified that somebody went too fast and went on and on and on about that, but the actual victim wasn't there, so that didn't happen, the alleged defendant. And then it just was like that, a bunch of stupid, really boring traffic things, basically. So I went upstairs to get the police report, as promised. They had no idea what was going on.
You couldn't get the police report on your own arrest.
They just didn't know what was happening.
And Keith McHenry himself was arrested for allegedly vandalizing the sidewalk. That is to say, by carefully, it looked like to me when I saw the marks, if it was he who did them, putting in these additional blue bracketed boxes that would allow people additional performance spaces because they had been significantly reduced by the Julie Hendy drive away the performers gang from the city bureaucrats who were apparently charged with doing that.
I couldn't find what's the guy's name? I forget the damn DA's name that I'm hassling with.
Archie Brown? Black guy?
No. Maybe it is. Is it Archie? No, they were actually got some other name, but Archie was the guy that was in the...
Maybe it was Archie. Maybe I'm missing his last name.
Yeah, Archie. It was something like that. I'm going to have to look it up. But the woman at the desk, she kept calling this person over and over again, trying to find him, and he never answered.
The significance of all this, which sounds a little obscure perhaps and perhaps irrelevant, is Keith McHenry charged with vandalism for actually engaging in, if it was him, public service work, got a promise from the judge to have the police report issued so he could view the allegations and also see what the supposed evidence was against him. And that was supposed to be available by the district attorney the next day. The next day it was not. So that's kind of the long and the short of it. we're kind of reaching the end of the show, so I'm going to skip right now to the actual arrival of the police en masse, and that happened around 11:30. Actually, they came four times. Actually, came five times. Actually, they came six times, if you count the time they set up the lights. Actually, set up the lights. If you count the time that they actually not set up the lights, but put the light machines in position and covered the parking meters, that was one occasion early in the afternoon, then you heard me confronting Lieutenant Lamas and his sergeant 6 hours later, when they actually cranked up the lights and turned them on, 8 or 9 o'clock. Then they showed up, and this is the third time they showed up, and actually then began ticketing people in force. And I'm going to play that now.
So I count 19 up and 16. Police are here.
I was counting 35 people, actually, non-police people who were actually present at the protest. So it was a significantly smaller protest than the protest immediately before, but actually the one that was two protests before. But people were there, they stayed, and I'm still impressed with the caliber of what we had there.
And 16 coming down the sidewalk.
Always come from that direction or that wall.
Generally speaking,
the little spot
or through here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So total of 19 and 16, and it's 35 people. Over there, and we have one young woman on a bike who's riding around, kind of sounding the alarm. Abby and others who are camped, who are in their bags, are moving their bedding. Well, you know, that's, we can do that if we want to, if we go for a bus. I was thinking, before you arrived, you didn't hear the General Assembly meeting, did you?
No.
They decided they wanted to move to the sidewalk. Here come the cops.
I thought they said they were going to do it.
Well,
I'm not going to leave them.
Sounds like a fun
What's
place
that?
To be.
I'm not
going
to leave them.
Who's over there? Yeah. The idea being people were going to come to this, go to the sidewalk, and then if they mess with anybody, we'd all come back into the park. Here comes.
And there were two strategies proposed. One was to do that, to have people do what they'd done in the last two or three protests, which is police came, would tell people to move, they would move their stuff to the sidewalk, and then police would leave, and some people would return to the park, and if the police came back, they would get tickets, or they would try to move again. Often the police didn't come back in the prior protests. The other strategy that was proposed for this time, because we had heard that this was going to be a harsher situation, was for people to kind of cluster around the area where the agendas were posted and point out to the police that, A, they were looking at the agendas, or they want to be able to look at the agendas, and, B, they were also on the public walkway through the so-called closed area, which is an exception to the right or the restriction from being in the closed area. Neither of these were accepted by the police. And what most people tried to do, some people actually stayed next to the agendas. One of them was Kevin, and he was arrested. I was not by the agendas. I tried the other strategy, but I also was arrested, although I was arrested because I asked to be taken to a magistrate before I would sign a citation. Police officers want to get you to sign a citation because that ties you into the court system. You have to show up or get a failure to appear, and then the ticket goes down and destroys your credit or gets an additional fine added to it. And the whole legitimacy of the police process has been irking me for years, actually, around this particular area at City Hall. They have no right to close it at night. It's a center of, this, as I said, the seat of government. But anyway, here's the audio record of what happened.
They're
They're writing citations with no warnings. Okay. Is that right? No warnings, Phil?
I don't know.
Maybe no warnings. So you can have, if you want to take a citation, stay, but otherwise get up.
Sorry, I didn't mean to wake you up like that, Toby.
And police have reached the area that is across from the Civic Auditorium and are writing citations. Moving my stuff onto the sidewalk here.
You're moving stuff?
Well, I just want to make sure that they don't suddenly start confiscating property. And, let's see what. So let's see what they're doing. They are. I think they're just trying to move people off. Well, they've reached the massive enclosure of Fox and Company, and looks like a second. There are four police officers on the Civic Auditorium side, another four or more approaching from the five.
So there were actually three groups of four or five police officers going around citing people, and it was hard to document. In the past, I was trying to get close enough to audio what was going on, and photographers were videoing it. This time, I think we have our video journalist in the studio. Israel, were you able to be on?